Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, October 10th, and I'm Nat Cardos, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, traffic report on Broadway shows almost a fifth of serious pedestrian collisions occur there in the county. Fortuna Council directs nitrous oxide ban, retail tobacco licensing, Humble's Walk to End Alzheimer's brings community together, and Ray Hamill with the sports report. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
On October 8th, the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities, CRTP, published a traffic safety report on 4th and 5th Streets in Eureka. That area is well known for frequently having serious to fatal traffic collisions, and the report found that despite only representing about 0.2% of the county's road miles, the corridor has been the site of 18% of the county's pedestrian fatalities and serious injuries in the past decade. KMUD News spoke with Colin Fisk, the executive director of CRTP, for more information on the report.
So we've known for a long time that kind of the whole US 101 corridor through Eureka is really quite dangerous, especially for people walking and biking and rolling. And historically, we've done a lot of work on advocating for Caltrans to make improvements to the Broadway part of the corridor, because that has been just a bit more dangerous. And, you know, Caltrans has started doing work with this project that's currently under construction on South Broadway, and they have at least the concept for plans to improve the rest of the Broadway corridor, but there's no plans at all for kind of a safety overhaul of 4th and 5th Streets. And so we thought it was time to really, you know, quantify some of the safety hazards there and highlight the need for safety upgrades.
The report highlights safety hazards that both pedestrians and drivers face, as well as provides suggestions on ways Caltrans can improve safety on the corridor. The report highlights specifically that the current one-way, three-lane design results in unpredictable driver lane changing and turning behavior and completely lacks bicycle infrastructure. Here's Fisk with more highlights on the report.
It's kind of a tiny little portion of the street miles, but it's nearly a fifth of the serious pedestrian incidents. It's actually the rate per mile of pedestrian deaths and serious injuries there is 90 times the average rate for the county, so it's just very high. And, you know, if you walk along there and if you look at reports that folks have made on the Street Story platform, which is a crowdsourced safety reporting system, or we also did walk audits last year, a couple of walk audits in the corridor with members of the public and local agencies to kind of identify in person some of the deficiencies. And really anyone who's spent time walking in that corridor, I think, knows that it's not really safe, especially to cross the street, and certainly not comfortable or a fun place to be. And the other thing that stands out, and again, is pretty obvious to anyone who's familiar with it, is that there's just no bike infrastructure at all. So when folks bike there, they're either biking in traffic, which is pretty dangerous. It's relatively high speeds and high volumes of traffic, or they're on the sidewalk, which is also not ideal. And either way, they need to cross the street, and there's really no safe way to do that a lot of times. So really just it has been designed primarily for moving as much traffic through as fast as possible, but it's the downtown. It's the area where we have lots of housing and government services and businesses, and it's kind of a main street for Eureka, too. So lots of people just by necessity are walking and biking and, you know, coming to the bus stop and so forth. So we need to account for those folks too.
Some of the CRTP safety suggestions include traffic signals with exclusive bike phases at key unsignalized intersections, bike turn boxes, extended no parking zones at intersection approaches, raised crosswalks on side streets, as well as many others. The report also highlights the importance of these two streets as they provide access to many civic, commercial, and social destinations. Fisk expands more on the safety suggestions.
So there are a number of recommendations in the report. I would say the biggest one overall is converting one of the sort of general travel lanes, one of the current sort of car and truck lanes, to a protected bike lane, which means a bike lane that's, you know, either behind a row of cars where there's currently parking or, you know, behind a curb or some other kind of protection. And of course, that adds a bike facility, provides protection for people biking, also provides a layer of protection for people on the sidewalk, because actually a few of those pedestrian crashes, people were on the sidewalk when they were hit. So that is important. It also slows traffic substantially by sort of reducing the width of the street overall. And speed is kind of the number one both predictor of crashes, but also the number one factor in determining how severe a crash is. So if someone is going to crash, we'd much rather that everyone walk out unscathed than that somebody die or be seriously injured. And sort of going along with this protected bike lane suggestion is a protected intersection. And folks may not be familiar with this because we don't actually currently have any in the county, although we're about to have the first one. Caltrans is building one or two of those on Broadway. And basically you have these sort of raised islands in the corners of the intersection behind which bikes can wait. And so they're protected from traffic. And let's say you want to make a left turn at an intersection. Currently, you would have to merge through a couple of lanes of, you know, high-speed traffic to get in the left lane and then wait there, all exposed to vehicles, until you can make your turn. But with a protected intersection, you can make a two-part turn. So you can continue in your protected facility kind of across the street and then wait behind the island until it's safe to cross in the other direction. So that provides much more safety for bicyclists. It also, again, calms traffic a bit because it makes it harder to make a turn really fast in a vehicle. And if you design them right, it can help pedestrians quite a bit as well, because parts of those islands can be sort of pedestrian waiting areas, and so it makes the pedestrians much more visible to drivers and allows pedestrians to see approaching vehicles much more clearly. And one of the things we hear over and over again about this corridor is that drivers can't see pedestrians and vice versa, often because of parked cars and other obstructions.
This is only the first step in improving safety conditions on the 4th and 5th Street corridor. Ultimately, it is up to Caltrans to implement and fund these changes. A project like this could take years to implement, though CRTP is hoping that the urgency of the issue will encourage Caltrans to act faster.
It's a Caltrans facility. It's a state highway. Of course, it goes through the city of Eureka. So, you know, pretty much anything that is done will have to be, Caltrans will have to do it, and it will also require coordination with the city. We have sent both of them the report. And I think, you know, the first steps are to develop either a plan for the whole corridor, an official plan that Caltrans can rely on, or to develop project concepts for the corridor that they can then go out for funding. And Caltrans has its own internal funding process. But, you know, I think just like with the Broadway situation, we're going to really be encouraging moving quickly on this. And by quickly, I mean, you know, we're talking about sort of Caltrans terms. So normally a project like this to make a big change to the street for Caltrans might take a decade or more. And so we're hoping that it can be more like a couple of years. They can use some more flexible funding and really prioritize making these changes, because they're just like that whole corridor. And we're also continuing to urge Caltrans to fund those projects for the rest of the Broadway corridor, because, you know, every year people die on 101 in Eureka, often multiple people. And so, you know, it really is kind of a life or death matter of the longer we delay, the more people are going to die. And we just think it calls for urgent action.
To access the report and learn more about what CRTP does, the website is transportationpriorities.org. Moved by commentaries on the effects of nitrous oxide use, the Fortuna Council aims to ban its sales in the city, and a companion action is an ordinance regulating tobacco sales. Daniel Mintz reports.
Told by county public health staff that nitrous oxide use is a problem in Fortuna, the city council has directed a ban on its retail sale and has also asked city staff to draft a tobacco retail licensing ordinance. The decisions, made during an October 6 study session, respond to a joint presentation from the county's public health branch describing recreational inhalants and tobacco use among youths as a growing crisis. Katie Jo Slaughter, a county public health staffer, said she's, quote, deeply motivated as a Fortuna parent to address the nitrous issue. She summarized data on nitrous use and recent survey results.
We know from the California Healthy Kids Survey that our kids are already trying inhalants. 4% of 7th graders and 11th graders in Humboldt County report that they've already tried inhalants, which is concerning from a public health perspective. In 2021, my program, Substance Use Prevention, undertook a community survey young people and community members both highlighted that nitrous oxide misuse in litter should be a priority area for our program.
Focusing on nitrous sales in the Eel River Valley area, Jay Macedo of the Public Health Branch detailed findings from a February 2025 analysis of 28 Eel River Valley retail outlets, including 17 in Fortuna. Nitrous oxide products were found in plain sight at four locations. All three smoke shops in Fortuna were openly selling them. On a countywide level, 24 out of 144 retail businesses visited by county staff between October 2024 and April 2025 had nitrous oxide products in plain sight. Long-term side effects of nitrous are troublesome, including neurological damage, and short-term effects in extreme cases include heart attacks. During a public comment period, Fortuna Police Chief Matthew Eberhardt described nitrous use as a concerning issue.
As stated previously, this is an issue. I had a homecoming week this last week, Thursday night, down at the school. Next day, Friday, I get a text from a city employee that right outside the high school along 12th Street, several large canisters in the brush of nitrous oxide. There is no reason it needs to be in our community. As the chief of police, as a parent, as a community member, I am saying please implement the strictest, you know, policies that we can. Give us the tools to address them. If it's adding in the administrative citations that come with a hefty fine, rejecting their license, all of that, I think we have a duty to protect our community.
Second District County Supervisor Michelle Bushnell related her direct knowledge of nitrous use and its sometimes catastrophic effects.
It has a huge effect and a huge use of 20, 30, and 40-year-olds. I have had in my district, that includes your city, I can't even count how many parents, family members, grandmas have called me and said, moms and dads of adult children that have said, my daughter's paralyzed. My son died. My son died with a cracker in his hand. Please do something. This was one of the key things that when I first became supervisor, I became aware of. I knew about it prior to then. Southern Humboldt, which was my community at the time, I knew it was very prevalent. I had an employee that was 22 years old that died with a cracker in his hand. Another kid that I hauled on my school bus died in a basement, huffing on that cracker, froze his lungs. And it is prevalent in all age groups, not just children, but it really needs to be not so readily available.
Bushnell also related that several years ago, her car was stolen, and the thief and passengers were using nitrous oxide, ran the car off State Route 36, striking and killing a pedestrian. She described nitrous as, quote, a terrible, terrible drug. Moved by the commentaries, the council unanimously voted to direct city staff to develop a nitrous oxide ordinance modeled after the county's ban. The vote also included drafting of a tobacco retail licensing ordinance similar to the county's, which was adopted in 2023 and sets retailer density, ensures compliance with a state flavored tobacco ban, and enforces age restrictions. Council members Kyle Conley and Abe Stevens were absent. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
On October 11th, the Alzheimer's Association will host their 10th annual Walk to End Alzheimer's in Humboldt County, educating the community and raising donations for research and aid. Gabriel Zucker reports.
On Saturday, October 11th, the Alzheimer's Association will host the 10th annual Humboldt Walk to End Alzheimer's in Eureka at the Dorney Center located at 1011 Waterfront Drive, Eureka. Check-in begins at 9 a.m., followed by the opening ceremony at 10:30 a.m. The walk will start at 11 with ice cream given out at the end of the event. Here is Kim Quilho, the Community Engagement Manager for the Alzheimer's Association, with more information on the event.
Folks will start start arriving around 9 a.m. They check in. If they have any donations to turn in, they do that then. Once they get checked in, they go into the Adorney Center. We've got lots of different tables set up with different nonprofit vendors. We've got Redwood Caregivers Resource Center, Sequoia Senior Living, Timber Ridge. The Alzheimer's Association has a table. So lots of different tables, visiting angels. You can go around if you need to get information. And then everyone who registers and walks in the door will be given a promise flower. The promise flower are in four different colors, and you get one according to your relationship to the disease. So if someone doesn't have any sort of connection to Alzheimer's, then they get an orange flower, and basically they just are there to support the cause. If they get a yellow flower, they're a caregiver. If they get a purple flower, they've lost someone to the disease. And if they get a blue flower, they're someone who's been diagnosed with some form of dementia. You get your flower, you go around to all the different tables, learn stuff. At 10:30, we do our opening ceremonies. We've got 10 minutes of really important information about our latest research, what's going on, and then we move on to the Promise Flower Ceremony. So we've chosen four individuals that represent these four different flowers. They will get up, and when we example, like the blue flower holder gets up and holds his flower up, and then we've got a volunteer that will read his story. Pretty touching part of the opening ceremony. And as soon as we're done with that part, then we dismiss everyone and Marching Lumberjacks will be playing. We walk out to close to the amphitheater next to the Adorney Center and the walk takes off. A lot of folks will just do the 1 mile loop, takes you up to Carson Mansion where the teams will stop and have a picture taken, a team picture. And then they can make their way back to the Adorney Center or they can keep going into Old Town along the route back on Waterfront Drive. And that's about 2.5 miles if they decide to go that route. And then there'll be ice cream waiting for everyone at the finish.
The donations from this event go to help spread awareness and support across the world. This includes the National Alzheimer's Helpline, their website, and help with Alzheimer's research projects all over the world.
We fund a 1-800 helpline that's available in over 200 languages. It's available 24/7. So folks that have been diagnosed, their family members, they can call that number anytime. They're going to get a live dementia specialist on the phone. They're not going to get a volunteer. They're going to get someone who's trained to help folks. We get a lot of these phone calls at 2 in the morning. That's a super helpful resource. We have our website. We fund all the brochures and stuff that we're able to give out. And then we fund a ton of research. So we do research all over the world. This year, the Alzheimer's Association, it was their largest one-year funding of Alzheimer's research. So we were able to fund $112 million. That is 250 projects around the world.
If anyone is interested in participating or donating, go to alz.org/walk. This event not only spreads awareness, but also helps break the stigma of dementia and shows the people being affected, the community is there to support them.
We just encourage the public to come out this Saturday. It's a short little event. It doesn't take your whole weekend. It's just 3 hours long. And it means so much to folks in the community that have been diagnosed with this disease. Unfortunately, there's still a huge stigma with a dementia diagnosis. Every year when I'm out there, I look around and I talk to the folks with dementia and they're just like blown away that so many in the community cares. I would say just, you know, come on out and check it out and see what it's like.
This event is being held after some groundbreaking research was released in the Journal of the American Medical Association. The U.S. Pointer clinical trial was released on July 28th of 2025 and showed the positive impact of healthy habits and diet to combat Alzheimer's. This research was done over 2 years studying two different groups for the research. The results made the Alzheimer's Association very excited.
Definitely. So the U.S. Pointer study, we were thrilled about the results with that. We took in the clinical trials, it was folks that were more destined to get dementia. It wasn't folks that were already healthy, eating healthier and exercising. So we took folks that weren't exercising on a regular basis, didn't have a very good diet, maybe had high blood pressure and other chronic diseases. So for 2 years, the one group had someone that really followed them closely. They checked in like 38 times, and the other group just had like a manual that they had to follow. So at the end of 2 years, both groups definitely made huge advancements, but the group that was more structured, they actually saw a 2-year improvement in their cognition. What's exciting about this is we've always thought that if folks exercise 4 days a week, if they eat a healthier diet, Mediterranean mind diet, if they stay socially engaged, if they pay attention to check in on a regular basis with their doctor, do they have high blood pressure, what's going on with their weight. We always thought that if they did all those things, that they would be able to either delay or prevent dementia. And now we have scientific proof that this is definitely a reality. So we know that up to 40% of people can delay or prevent dementia by just following this healthier diet.
For anyone with questions about Alzheimer's, reach out to the National Alzheimer's Association at 1-800-272-3900. This is Gabriel Zucker reporting for KMUD News.
And here's Ray Hamill filling you in on this week's local sports, including a win for Fortuna High School Huskies, as well as celebration for Arcata High School's coaches and athletes. Here's the sports report.
Conference play kicked off for all 9 HDNL varsity football teams this past weekend, including big wins for Fortuna and St. Bernard's in the Big Four. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the Big Four teams in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including all of last week's high school football games, a look ahead to this weekend's action, some college football news, some high school soccer and volleyball, some high school golf, and why the Arcata Tigers are celebrating some legendary coaches and athletes this weekend. But first up, the Big Four kicked off in football over the weekend with two teams making a case as to why they should be considered frontrunners for this year's championship. On Friday night, Fortuna welcomed Del Norte to Husky Field and dominated on the way to a 31-14 win. Quarterback Will Shaw threw four touchdown passes as the home team opened up a dominating 24-0 lead and held the visitors scoreless through the opening three quarters. With the win, the Huskies improved to 1-0 in the Big Four and 2-3 overall, while the Warriors dropped to 0-1 and 3-2. The following afternoon, St. Bernard's won its conference opener against crosstown rival Eureka, cruising to a 43-6 victory. Senior Tyler Heinrichs was outstanding in the win and scored three touchdowns, two on receptions from quarterback Trenton Hagler, and one on a 60-yard pick six. Devin Curran also had a big game and scored two TDs, including a pick six, while Hagler had three touchdown passes. The Crusaders remain unbeaten on the year and improved to 1-0 in conference and 5-0 overall. The Little Four teams also kicked off conference play. The high-flying Ferndale Wildcats won 73-0 at Hoopa to go to 1-0 in conference and 5-0 on the season, and they have now remarkably outscored their first five opponents by a combined 299-0. The shutout loss was the third straight for Hoopa, which dropped to 0-1 and 1-4. Also in the Little Four, the Arcata Tigers pulled away in the second half at McKinleyville and won 62-34. With the win, Arcata improved to 1-0 in the Little Four and 2-3 overall, while the Panthers dropped to 0-1 and 2-3. Conference play continues this weekend for both the Little Four and Big Four teams. On Friday night, Hoopa plays at Arcata and Eureka travels to Del Norte, while on Saturday afternoon, McKinleyville plays at Ferndale and Fortuna travels to St. Bernard's. In eight-person football, the South Fork Cubs continue to impress with a 42-22 win over Round Valley in Miranda on Monday night. That game was originally scheduled to take place in Covelo on Friday, but no officials turned up and it had to be moved to South Fork High for Monday night. With the win, which was their second straight, the Cubs improved to 1-0 in the NCL3 and 3-1 overall. The Cubs will continue their season when they host Potter Valley on Friday night. Some of the Mendocino County schools were also in action last weekend. The Willits Wolverines got back to winning ways with a 21-14 victory at Lower Lake and improved to 4-1 on the season, while the Fort Bragg Timberwolves won their third straight game and improved to 3-3 with an 18-6 victory at Upper Lake. Willits and Fort Bragg will both be back in action on Friday night. The Wolverines will host Clear Lake and Fort Bragg travels to St. Helena. The 2-3 Ukiah Wildcats had a bye last week, but will try to put back-to-back losses behind them when they travel to Santa Rosa to play Montgomery on Friday night. In local college football, meanwhile, College of the Redwoods will kick off conference play this weekend at Sierra College in Rockland as the 0-5 Corsairs look for their first win of the season after a bye last week. Sierra is 1-4 and kickoff is set for 1 p.m. on Saturday afternoon. In local high school girls soccer, the Ferndale Wildcats continue to set the pace in the HDNL. On Saturday, the Wildcats knocked off a Big Four school for the second straight weekend, defeating Arcata 5-0 in a non-conference showdown after beating Eureka 2-1 the previous weekend. They followed that with a 3-1 win over St. Bernard's in Little Four action on Tuesday as they stretched their unbeaten run to 12 straight games, 11 of which they have won and 8 of which they have been shutouts. They now are 4-0 in conference play and 2 wins clear in the standings. Also in the Little Four this week, the South Fork Cubs secured their first point in conference, tying Del Norte 2-2 in Miranda. In the Big Four on Tuesday, Fortuna took over the lead in the conference standings with a 1-0 win over McKinleyville, while Arcata moved up to second with a 1-0 win over Eureka. In HDNL boys soccer, the race for this year's championship is shaping up to be a 3-horse race. Arcata won a pivotal showdown against Fortuna on Saturday 3-1 and followed that with a 4-1 win over McKinleyville on Wednesday. Arcata leads the conference standings with 13 points, but Fortuna is just 1 point back and Del Norte is just 1 point behind the Huskies. On Wednesday, Del Norte hosted Eureka and won 3-0, while Fortuna got the better of South Fork 17-1. League action continues this weekend, including a pivotal showdown in Crescent City between Fortuna and Del Norte. In Big 5 volleyball, the Arcata Tigers moved into a tie for the conference lead with Eureka after an exciting 5-sets win over the Loggers on Tuesday, while Del Norte remained in the mix with a 4-sets win over Fortuna. In the Little Four, St. Bernard's inched closer to the conference title with a straight sets win over South Fork, and the Crusaders now sit 2 wins clear of the chasing pack with a record of 5-0 and 4 games remaining. Also on Tuesday, the Ferndale Wildcats kept their championship ambitions alive with a straight sets win over Hoopa and improved to 3-2 in the Little Four. In local high school girls golf, Del Norte's Bria Larson carded the low score of the day in the 5th round of league play at Beaupré in McKinleyville on Wednesday. It was the 2nd straight individual win for Larson, who now holds an 8-stroke lead in the race for this year's championship. And rounding out another busy week in local sports, legendary coaches Troy Gazzetti and Carlos Avalar were both inducted into the Arcata High Athletics Hall of Fame this week, along with the 1972 Tigers baseball team, which had 5 players go on to the pro ranks. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
And in national native news, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is national native news. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The federal government shutdown is in its 2nd week. Tribal leaders across the country are continuing to raise concerns, saying Indian country will bear the burden. Matt Laszlo has more from Washington.
No one knows the full extent of how the shutdown will hit Indian country, but policymakers are braced for pain to come. Democrats continue to band together, demanding Congress intervene to keep Affordable Care Act premiums from doubling in the coming months. Arizona Democratic Senator Ruben Gallego says those future rate hikes promise more pain than today's temporary furloughs.
Well, it just depends. Like, some government workers obviously will feel it when they don't get their next paycheck because they already got the first paycheck. But when people are really going to feel it is around November 1st when they start getting open enrollment and 24 million of them are going to have their insurance rates doubled.
Take the Indian Health Service. While Medicare and Medicaid are first payers, IHS is a payer of last resort, which means the IHS budget is insulated for now, according to Oklahoma Republican Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, an enrolled member of the Cherokee Nation.
Right now, nobody's affected yet. They're dealing off reimbursements, and while their reimbursements come off Medicaid and Medicare, and of course, that's not affected by this.
Even though Mullen isn't worried about IHS cuts, he says that doesn't mean Congress can shrug off the unseen impacts of a federal government shutdown.
There is no pressure taken off of us. We're in a shutdown. The thing is like, when are level heads going to prevail in the Democrat Party? That's what we're waiting on.
Indian country was already reeling from federal cuts before the shutdown. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. rescinded IHS staffing cuts earlier this year. But New Mexico Democratic Senator Ben Ray Lujan says cuts to other parts of the federal health care budget have been felt across Indian country.
There's a hospital in the state of New Mexico, an IHS facility that no longer offers support for moms delivering kids or having babies. And that's all because of the Trump administration and a direct result of the poor leadership coming from Robert Kennedy.
For National Native News, Matt Laszlo in Washington.
A new law clarifies the role of Washington State's tribes on local boards of health, granting each tribe a seat on their county's board, appointing their own representative. Isabel Charlet reports.
The change clarifies a 2020 state law that requires local boards of health to include members who are not elected officials, including tribal representatives. Vicki Lowe is with the American Indian Health Commission, a nonprofit that works with the state to promote wellness in Washington's Native communities. She says the previous language was not clear about who was responsible for appointing tribal representatives to health boards or how many seats were available.
I'm hoping going forward we can get more tribes on these local boards of health and the local relationship and working together to keep all of our community healthy and safe will happen.
Every county in the state has a local board of health that is tasked with enforcing health laws, controlling infectious diseases, and setting local policies. Of Washington's 29 federally recognized tribes, Lowe says so far about 15 have appointed someone to their local board. Ashley Bell is the tribal liaison for the Washington State Board of Health. She says the new law respects and affirms tribal sovereignty and makes sure that tribes are a part of public health conversations.
They are a part of the community and really have a direct impact on how community health happens.
The Washington Board of Health is in the first stages of the rulemaking process for the new law, which includes getting public feedback and consulting with the state's tribes and urban Indian health organizations. Bell says they are hoping to be done next July. I'm Isabel Charlet.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Dennis Marr, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Gabriel Zucker, Ray Hamill, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Are you passionate about your community? Looking to report on what's happening around Mendocino? KMUD News is looking for streamer reporters from the Mendocino area to cover local Mendocino stories that matter. Whether you're a seasoned journalist or just eager to learn, we'll help you get started. You'll get training, support, and a chance to amplify real voices from your community. If you're interested, email news@kmud for more information. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.